Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome everyone, welcome, and happy Valentine's Day today. No surprise, we're talking about relationships today, but taking a slightly different angle. My first guest is a love relationship expert who says that all great relationships begin within, with yourself. So we'll be talking about that in just a moment. And coming up around 12:30, we'll be talking about changing relationships and reinventing yourself by stopping the drama. How do you get the drama out of your life? Marlene Chisholm specializes in workplace drama, but you know what? Relationships are relationships. And she said if you can improve on some of the strategies that she gives, you're going to improve every relationship you have. She has a great personal story to tell, too, because after 21 years of working on a factory line, she went back to university and totally reinvented her life. First, I'm very pleased to welcome Marianne Comerato. She's an award-winning author of the books Skinny, Tan and Rich, Unveiling the Myth, and Hindsight, What You Need to Know Before You Drop Your Drawers. I mean, come on, could we not talk to Marianne? She's a national speaker and clinical hypnotherapist, relationship coach and radio personality. And Marianne is also the relationship advice columnist for the Beverly Hills Times and a go-to expert for Hollywood life. Marianne Comerato, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's so great to be here, and happy Valentine's Day to you and everybody else who's joining us.
And to you, too.
Thank you.
And tell us why and how you got into this line of work, Marianne.
Oh, my gosh. I have been in the personal development industry since I've been 18 years old, so it's not new for me. I started out as a chemical dependency counselor at 21 after I had volunteered for several years working with kids, primarily teenagers who were chemically dependent. And then somewhere along the line, I think in my mid-20s, I became fascinated with relationship dynamics. And probably because I had a fairly large chip on my shoulder, feeling like that most relationships felt inequitous. Right, they weren't egalitarian as we want them to be. And so I started exploring why that is, what I could do about it. I got involved in the media, started producing television, and boy, the rest is history. I have had a lust for understanding these dynamics, ironing them out in my own life, and then teaching them to folks around the world ever since then.
Interesting. And, you know, people always want to know when people are giving relationship advice. You are married.
I am. Oh, my God. I have a great relationship. You know, that's funny because once upon a time, you didn't have to have a great relationship to be a relationship expert, right?
True.
you just had to understand the fundamentals, which are still true. But it's really something. The fact of the matter is I have a beautiful relationship. My husband is such a gift.
You actually work together a little, I understand.
We do.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we were just at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles teaching our new deck, all about our self-inquiry divination deck that we created that we use as a tool in our own relationship. It's wonderful to work with him. Really magical. That's only been happening for the last couple of years, but we so enjoy it. It's been a lot of fun.
And I'm working today, Marianne, because I know you work on many different things and talk about many different issues, but, you know, mostly to do with relationships. And for most of our time together today, I'm looking at a workshop which you sent to me. It's called Great Relationships Begin Within. Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about this and tell us, first of all, what the Great Relationships Begin Within, a little bit about that philosophy, what it means.
Oh, you bet. Well, so many of us, myself included, are indoctrinated into the idea, the concept that there is such a thing as happily ever after. And we know this because all we have to do is turn on the television, look around us at every turn, and see that that's sort of what we've been bought and, you know, we've been sold and we bought hook, line, and sinker. And so finding our way through that, becoming disenchanted was something I recognized was really important. The way that we look at that, the lens I look at that now through, is something I call being internally referenced. So most of us, again, are externally referenced. We think love happens outside of ourselves, right, which unfortunately sets us up for pain and suffering. All you have to do is look back at any relationship you've had and see that the one common denominator, aside from yourself in this relationship, is the expectation that love comes from outside of ourselves. So what I found was that's not true at all.
Yeah.
That there is an ever-present, constant flow and access to love at all times, that all we need to do is turn our attention and develop a practice that fosters that truth. It's a higher truth. And once we do, once we know that the field of love is something that is in and through and near us all of the time, we become less desperate, really, seriously, right?
Right,
less
right.
Less desperate to craft ourselves, mold our behavior, adjust the way that we move in and out of relationships in such a way that we know we're okay. And so we have more choice versus feeling like someone is going to complete us, or as soon as I find the right person, everything will be okay. So that fundamental shift is inherent in that philosophy, because what I found time and time again over the last 30 years is great relationships begin within. Absolutely,
yeah.
At every turn.
So is that why you would say that a lot of women, and some men too, are desperate for commitment in a relationship because they're looking for that other person to fulfill
Absolutely.
Them?
Absolutely. We want to hook them up. We want to lock them down. There's no mistake that we call it the ball and chain, right? Because we want to make sure now that we can rest in that. I have attached myself permanently to my source of being okay, right? This external person that once I have a commitment, then I don't have to be alone. I don't have to be uncomfortable. I don't have to feel empty. I don't have to take care of myself. I don't, you know, fill in the blank. And that's certainly where most of that is derived from, in a deep insecurity, and which, again, is why so many relationships go sideways. Because they can't take the strain. They weren't intended to be set up that way. It's not dynamic. It's like having a hostage, really.
Yeah. Is there a number one reason why relationships end badly? I know from talking with many friends that, you know, oftentimes they're like, I just don't know what happened.
Yeah, I can tell you. Absolutely. It's my favorite question. The number one reason almost all relationships end badly is because we make the mistake of mistaking chemistry for love or connection. And the chemistry pull is strong, but, you know, we all love it, right? We're junkies. We think the stronger the pull, the greater the indicator that this person is the best candidate for a long-term relationship, right? It
yeah.
must be love. I have never felt this way before. So it must be the one, my soulmate, thump, 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 dry mouth, you know, I can't sleep, I can't eat, all of it, right?
Right, right.
It's not true. Unfortunately, and, you know, somebody's got to tell us the truth at some point, because otherwise we just keep repeating these unconscious relationships over and over and over again, expecting a different result, which, by the way, is the definition for insanity.
Right.
And then we wake up and realize there are two reasons that we feel such a strong chemical pull. And science has really established this for us. So you don't have to believe me. It's actually it's a scientific
well,
fact.
Well, that
right
was going to be my next question, because I understand there is a psychological reason for, you know, when we say love is blind.
Yes, yes. There's a biological reason and a psychological reason. The biological being the greater pull on some level, because it comes from our brain stem. The sense of someone smelling a certain way, we can't sleep, we sort of lose our mind, is because when we connect with someone who on every sensory level represents your offspring together would have the greatest likelihood of survival. In other words, you meet someone and you think that this heart palpitation you're having is an indicator of love, when no. It's just your body is telling you if you have sex and have a child with this person, your offspring will have the greatest likelihood of survival. That's how deeply it is wired inside of us. So our brainstem sends out all these chemicals that we have interpreted falsely as an indicator for love. The second, and equally compelling, overwhelming urges to merge with people, is the psychological love imprint. When we're, infants, we actually do interface with our parent in a certain way that makes an imprint inside of our brain, and we go on to develop this part of the brain that creates a map that many doctors right now are saying they're calling it a love map, a love imprint. It's a psychological imprint of what love looked like to you as a child. So there you are growing up, the way your parents loved you or didn't, the way they treated you or didn't, will have an imprint in your life, one that has an energetic force field, as it were. So when you're going around in life, when somebody registers in that force field as reminiscent or lights up what you know to be true on an unconscious level, all the chemicals go off once again. It's a kind of a recollection. It's a trigger that sends signals to the body. But the problem with that is, again, it's a misinterpretation. This is not love. This is a familiarity issue, okay? It's just two psyches recognizing each other's compatibility, but not in a good way, almost always.
Right, right.
And your neurosis match.
It is, as you said as well, so compelling, once those chemicals
absolutely. And you know what? And when you start to become disenchanted, which this is, you know, some of us need to grieve this, because some of us have had so much at stake. We put so much on the line thinking that this was love, that we really do need to grieve the idea that this is even true. It's not, and it's okay. What the good news is, Vicki, is that what's true is even better. The truth is even deeper and richer and wider and more juicy, more dynamic, and gets better over time rather than worse.
Right. Well, we're going to take a look at that. We need to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you about that, and I want to know a little bit more about self-inquiry, because you talk about that in this in your work that we're talking about today. So please stay with us. My guest is Marianne Camerato. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com. Coming next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Michael Linenberger will discuss mastering your workday. Dream coach Joyce Chapman shares how to develop beliefs that support your dreams. And business expert Roy Ossing says times are tough. Be different or be dead. Join us February 21st at noon Pacific on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See more at conversationslive.net.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Good news, Belgium. We're streamed worldwide at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. This ball and chain.
And welcome back, everyone, on this Valentine's Day. We're talking in this segment with Marianne Camerato. Her new book, or it's not a new book, actually, it's a workshop, but it's a workshop that you can do at home. You don't need to go anywhere to do this. You can do it at your own pace from the comfort of your own home. And it's called Great Relationships Begin Within, and that's what we're talking about in this segment. I wanted to talk about, we're going to get to the bit that's juicy and truthful and all that good stuff in a couple of minutes, but I wanted to start here, Marianne, with self-inquiry,
right?
And what that means.
Well, what it means, when I was 33 years old, I had achieved everything that I thought one was supposed to achieve here in the United States, the American dream. I had the house, the man, the child, the career, all of it. And I was seriously unhappy to the point where I actually laid down on my bed one day and begged God or anybody listening out there to just beam me up. I was empty, drained, unsatisfied, despondent, really. I had sought every outside possible salve, including psychology, numerology, paleontology, archaeology. Seriously, there was no stone unturned trying to alleviate what was this longing, this hole that I felt inside of me.
Yeah, and, we've all been there, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And thinking that this relationship in particular was supposed to fulfill that, and it just didn't. And so I got down on my knees and said a non-petitionary prayer, probably for the first time since I was a child. And in an instant, I had nothing less than a miraculous healing of my heart. And I was shown in that moment something that I call the Show Me Method, which is a body-centered self-inquiry. I was shown the truth of who I am in a moment. It changed my life forever, the lingering effect of which was a period of grace. I dictated all of the messages that I was given about how the mind-body system works. And it is part of my daily practice. So essentially what it is, in a nutshell, it's a way of, as I mentioned earlier in the show, of turning your attention inwards for the answers, for the love, for the healing, for all of it that we seek. And it took me many years to get past and, you know, turn all of that indoctrination around and getting really comfortable with that. But here's the really exciting part about self-inquiry. It is the thing that I sought all my life. I sought something that was so powerful, so strong, that no one could ever take away from me, that no one could ever make me feel small or insecure or ugly or fat or unlovable or anything ever again, and that is this. This is a connection to the divine truth of who you are, and I found it, and that's exactly what self-inquiry is based on. You finding a connection with this truth anytime, anywhere, and developing it and deepening it through practice.
Yeah, and I love this question in the workbook because I don't think I've really seen it put in this way before. You know, because as women, we tend to be nurturers and care for others and put others' needs first. But your question was, ask yourself, who would I be if I cared about me and what would that look like?
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's exactly what self-inquiry fosters. I always say to my husband, there is no we without me. It's not balanced. It's not even the way we were intended to be. Most of us are taught about, you know, look at marriage by choice is relatively new to us human types.
Yeah.
Right? We've got a couple hundred years of doing it fairly well and for reasons of love and compatibility. So the idea now that we have now the opportunity to move to the next level of consciousness, conscious relationship, is what really this conjures for us. It's an opportunity, an invitation to move into conscious awareness in relationship versus the old style, you know, this sort of bartering for survival, the old paradigm. This is a new paradigm for relationship, and it must begin with the stead you hold yourself in. The relationship that you have with yourself is, by the way, a reflection, is going to reflect everything around you.
Yeah.
So if you want to know how you feel about yourself, just take a look at the five closest people that you hang around, and you can get a litmus test like that.
Yeah, very true. And a couple of questions you throw out there about how do you take care of yourself? How often during a week do you make a conscious decision to do something truly loving for yourself? What's your pattern? What do you do when you start to take care of yourself or not?
Right.
What procrastinations, rationalizations, what stories did you tell yourself?
Yep. I'm going to offer up my favorite instant invitation into caring for yourself. I could even ask you to do it right now, Vicki. Go ahead. Where are your shoulders? Have they migrated up towards your earlobes?
They're always up there.
Right?
I have
They're
to
up
work.
There.
I
know
have
everybody
to work
listening can
down.
Relate to this. Literally right now, everybody just stop. Turn your attention inwards and take an audible breath and just drop your shoulders away from your earlobes. It's that fast. That is turning your attention to yourself, what do I need right now? Well, right now I just am going to take an audible breath, and it's delicious. It took me less than 1 second, maybe 2 seconds. That's what it will feel like. The more you love yourself, the more present you are to what you need. This is really what we're talking about versus that egoic, arrogant, you know, kind of, you know, thing that most of us are so afraid of, feeling like that we're being egocentric. That is not what self-love is about. That is not what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is real deep self-care, starting with just breathing. Breathing and noticing and relaxing into yourself. Doesn't that feel better?
It makes a huge difference. Yes, it does. And
really?
It really does. So you talked about, you know, getting really deep into this. And as we move through the workbook, there's a section called Let's Look Even Deeper. And your questions here are, who do you lead with in relationships? Mm-hmm. Which qualities do you put front and center? Are you sexy, intelligent, a caretaker, loose, controlled, needy, independent? Talk a little about that, if you would.
I'd be happy to. Remember when we talked about that love map?
Mm-hmm.
Well, part of what happens when we're kids, if we don't have enlightened witnesses for parents, which many of us don't because our parents were busy trying to survive and they had their character flaws and defects and all of that. So what happens is the persona is born, the false self, the way that we navigate through life and learn how to get what we need, primarily love, right, and being seen. So this persona is something we learned as children that will work to enroll people into being in relationship with us. So with regard to relationship, one of the most common ones that women run is the seductress, right? You've got your finger in your mouth, and you're twirling your hair, and you've got the pouty lip.
I never had that twirly kind of hair.
Right? You arch your back just ever so slightly. You look down and away, you know, that sort of, or maybe you do the vampy seductress. Whatever it is, the invitation here is, what's your rap? What's your routine? And why this is important? And for guys, you've got a rap too. Men will lead with their money, with their power, with their virility, with their muscles, you know, all the things that they think are going to entice women into what? The question is, what are you enrolling people into? Right, most of us, this is an unconscious thing we do, mm-hmm. an unconscious dance. The problem is once we have indoctrinated, enrolled people into our routine, we can't keep it up.
Yeah.
We can't keep it up. We get resentful. We get angry that they don't see who we really are, or we're frightened that we can never show them anything other than that. So relationships start to deteriorate as who we really are starts to emerge, as life starts to happen, as we have to attend to things. We can't keep up the rap. So the idea here is call yourself on your rap. Give a name. Give names to these parts of ourselves and bring awareness to them. And then we suffer less, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm running my routine. I'm running my seductress routine. What would it be like? I worked with a bunch of men last summer, and it was great. And the men loved the idea that they'd never even heard that they could maybe approach women authentically, that they didn't have to have a rap. If they were just comfortable and dropped into their body, took a deep breath, and just got into their humble belly brain and met someone there, they'd much rather have an authentic relationship versus a bunch of people who were attracted to their you know, posturing.
Right,
so this
right.
is just a more authentic way of making initial connection and then sustaining the relationship.
Yeah, well, there's so much great information in this workbook, but I can't let you go without answering this question, and we only have a minute or two here, Marianne. But what your book is called Hindsight, What You Need to Know Before You Drop Your Drawers. So give us a couple of things we need to know before we drop our drawers.
Yeah, you bet. Yes, most people assume, number one question I always ask everybody, and they go, why? Are you married? Number two, are you available for a relationship? And B, what does that mean? Critical questions that you want to know before you move in, before you have sex, before. Critical questions. Most people will say, well, you know, why was he flirting with me? Why was she flirting with me? Trust me. Take these two questions out for a test drive. You will be glad you did.
Save ourselves a lot of grief.
Absolutely.
What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
My favorite thing, aside from that great relationships begin within, is anytime you are in a scenario where you're either in a relationship or trying to get in one, is to remember my favorite little saying is stop, drop, and roll. Anytime you find yourself uncomfortable or insecure, stop. Take that audible breath. Turn your attention in. Drop inside yourself for the truth about what's happening, and then you can roll around in choices that the tomorrow part of you will be happy you did versus being in reaction. Again, stop, drop, and roll. You can take this with you in every scenario, and it'll be like a tool that you didn't have in your tool belt that you will love.
Marianne Camerata, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been great to be here, Vicky, and thanks everybody for listening.
And I want to let listeners know that you can find Marianne at mariannelive.com, and it's Marianne with an E, live.com. And we didn't get a chance to talk about the divination deck, but I pulled 3 cards on her website this morning. So go ahead and check out her website and pull your own cards. You can pull up to 7, I believe. Kind of a fun exercise there. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Marlene Chisholm. We're going to talk about stopping the drama. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Many times I've tried, love has never felt as good. Downtown, way up in the air, my heart's pounding, know that I'm aware. You make it easy.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Ever feel like strangling your boss?
You little...
Or maybe you're the boss and your employees make you want to strangle yourself. Drop that noose and tune in or call in to The Boss Show, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150. Hosts Jim Hessler and Steve Motenko, co-owners of Path Forward Leadership Development, will take your calls on everything boss-related, offering deep insights with a dollop of outrageousness. The Boss Show, workplace wisdom with heart and humor. Wednesday afternoons at 5, starting February 2nd.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Made fresh each day for you. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
You make it easy to let the past be done. You make it easy.
And welcome back, everyone. It's Valentine's Day. We're talking about relationships today. But in this segment, we're going to focus more on work relationships, although my guest will tell you that what happens, you know, your relationships at work carry over to your personal relationships, and interactions are basically interactions. My guest in this segment is Marlene Chisholm. She's a speaker, author, and communication consultant. She works with high-level professionals who want to increase personal performance and break through the obstacles keeping them from living a life of passion and purpose. Her signature process is known as the Stop Your Drama methodology, and Marlene has shared her programs with companies like NASA and McDonald's. Her new book is called Stop Workplace Drama, Training Your Team to Have No Complaints, No Excuses, and No Regrets. Let's bring around Marlene Chisholm. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. And a great book, great information in here. A very interesting website, too. But I wanted to start, first of all, before we get to any of that, with your personal journey, Marlene, because it's always interesting to see how people got where they got. And you certainly did this whole reinvention thing to the 10th degree. So let's talk a little bit about, you were working on a factory line, I understand, for 21 years. How did you get there?
You know, I just started there. I tried college for a little while right out of high school, and I was just kind of one of those people that kind of fell through the cracks. It was just overwhelming for me, given what else was going on in my life, and I just wanted my own, place. I wanted to move out. I wanted to have my own life, and I ended up getting a job, and it was with Kraft Foods, and I just loved it, my first couple of years, and really for quite some time I enjoyed it because it gave me what I wanted. My needs were met, but I ended up staying for quite a long time, and in the middle of that, I kind of went through a search, and a lot of people tend to go through that search whenever they become unhappy. They know that there's something more, and I definitely went through that, and then through a series of just self-development and going back to college and going through what I call the search, I had an awakening, and I found a message that I really wanted to share with the world, and so fast forward, and it's been 12 or 13 years now, and I've been doing professional speaking and training and sharing that message I wanted to share, and here we are with Stop Workplace Drama.
There you go. And I have to tell you, I'm one of those people who says, I don't do drama, and you talk about people like that in your book. And what I learned, lo and behold, what I learned reading your book is that, yes, I do have drama in my life, but I tend to call it challenge.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And there's good challenge, as we all know, the challenge, adventurous challenge, exploration and learning and growth. And then there's what I call negative challenge, which is what you really call drama, trying to cope with things that you don't really want to cope with and stuff like that. But I want to talk a little bit about, describe your book to us in your own words, if you would, and who you wrote this for.
I wrote this for anyone that leads other people. So managers, leaders, from anywhere from the managers on the front lines to the CEOs, because really this book is very universal. It has eight principles that I call the Stop Your Drama methodology. And these eight principles will help you not only identify drama, but it will help you to take steps to eliminate it and help you to get clear. So anyone that's going through any kind of drama, and I identify drama as any obstacle to your peace or prosperity. So that's my definition in the book. So whatever it is that's keeping you from peace or prosperity, and let's face it, there's a lot in the world right now that's scaring us. We're scared. Things are changing. So this book is really about navigating change as well.
Yeah, and there is, as you said, a lot of change going on. And as you point out in the book, the Chinese symbol for opportunity, it's the same, isn't it? The
yen and yang. Crisis and opportunity.
Crisis and opportunity. Yeah. So you ask questions. You ask, could we be missing the opportunity in front of us? And you start with talking about clearing the fog and answering some tough questions, like, who are you? What are you committed to? Where would you be without your drama? And what if? So how does this translate then to personal relationships? Because I believe it does. And you say in the book it does too.
Yes, it does. It does. Because we get the chance in life, no matter, all of us lead somewhere. We lead our own lives. We are parents. You might be leading a group at your church. All of us are stepping into leadership in some way. And so whatever relationships have to show us, there's a mirror that shows us where we are off track, where we're not clear, where we are out of relationship, or where we are forming resistant patterns. So no matter what's going on in any area where there's drama, you can look at those patterns and to say, what is that here to teach me about myself? So no matter what's going on in the workplace, it's really going to impact your personal life as well. And I do share a story in the beginning of the book that I think kind of ties it in. Is there time for that?
Yes, please.
I was on my way going with a girlfriend to Eureka Springs. We were going to do some shopping, and we stopped off at the little roadside cafe and went inside, and there was a woman and a man about the same age, and then an older woman, which was the mother of the woman who owned the restaurant. And we got to talking, and the man was kind of flirting with me here and there, and, we were just kind of rolling our eyes but kind of having some fun. And then the woman asked me what I did, and I said, oh, I help people stop their drama. And she said, oh, I don't do drama. She said, in fact, I get along well with all my ex-husbands. And she said, even the one that you're flirting with now. And I said, I kind of like smiled and rolled my eyes. And he said, well, you might not do drama with them, but with your ex-boyfriend, you got lots of drama. Tell her about that. And then she went into telling me about there was stalking, there was threats, there was theft, there was police reports. And I thought, you know, apparently we both have a different definition of drama.
Mm.
But there's an example of a business owner, nonetheless, a small business owner, really having poor customer service by talking about all of her problems to me. And we see that she did have a lot of drama. She just had a different definition than I did. And we see how that impacted her, and she probably did that kind of conversation as well with other clients, because whatever is on our mind, that's what we talk about. And so I find all the time that whether it's a hairdresser, a massage therapist, you know, you give the right person, even in a big corporation that's dealing with a client, and you give them a chance to talk about their drama, and I will guarantee you that I'm a good listener, and I will hear what the drama is, and it won't take but about 10 minutes.
Yeah, and you know what? I just stopped using a service provider, because when I go there, I want to go relax, and all I hear is whining.
Exactly.
And so after a few times, I was like, you know what? I'm going to find somebody else. But you say wherever there's drama, you always find at least one of three common elements, and they would be lack of clarity, relationship issue, and or resistance. Sometimes you get all three.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little about that, if you would.
Well, I love that you asked that question. And in reality, you will find all three. The reason I kind of gave the or part is because most people cannot find all three. And they'll say, well, no, I'm very clear. Or, you know, but really, I can help them whenever I'm coaching or listening. I can figure out where they're not clear by asking them certain questions, because we'll see the incongruency of their actions with what they say they want. And so there's always a lack of clarity. And the way that I explain this is that if we're in a rowboat going to an island, and I say that island is going to be good teamwork, let's say in the work case example, but the minute Sally makes me angry, I go to the left to the island called Look What Sally Did Wrong.
Right.
That's all I want to do is talk to everybody about what Sally's not doing, and that's the reason I can't do my job. The same thing in marriages. Let's take that and parallel it. Well, I say that I'm committed to a happy marriage, but in reality, I'm just committed to marriage because I want to have my picture in the paper at 25 years. We've battled the whole time. He's had three affairs, and I'm an alcoholic, but by golly, we stayed married. So there's a difference in being committed to a happy marriage and a marriage.
Yeah. Very good.
So there's a lack of clarity. And the second piece is relationship. And what I say about that is that relationships are more than with other people. I would venture to say that very few of us have a great relationship with money or time. We can hear this in the way people talk about money and time. I don't have enough money. Oh my gosh, the economy's going bust. I'm not going to survive. There's no time. I'm too busy. There's too much on my plate. I'm so stressed. Anywhere we have drama, if we'll listen to how we talk about that particular issue, we will see a relationship issue. And the only reason relationships exist is because of the way we think about something.
And then what am I resisting?
Resistance is where we are unwilling to do something, because every time there's a lack of peace or prosperity and we're stuck, and sometimes I call that the fence straddling position. You're on the fence, and for example, with myself and me, you know, working at a factory, you know, and wanting to get out when I had that transitional time, I just couldn't quite leave. I kind of stayed in limbo for 2 years. I wanted something more, but I was so afraid. So I wasn't fully at peace because I couldn't just stay on that one side of the fence that says, you know what, it's worth it to have the security and the regular job where I don't really have to think that much, just come and do the work. But then there was a part of me that wanted to explore and wanted something more and wanted to develop my skills and to really make a difference in the world, but I also couldn't do that because of my fear. So that's where we start resisting. So the willingness piece in resistance means that I have to be willing to do something. I either have to be willing to settle and say this was a choice, or I have to be willing to face the risk and the fear. And when we're unwilling to do either, we're stuck, and that's what resistance is.
Yeah, and this makes perfect sense to me. Oftentimes people will think they're in, you know, well, I'm in a comfort zone or the gap, as you put it, you know, between where we are and where we want to be. And it's just easier to stay here, but it's really not, because it's causing all of that drama for us.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. And truly, I think even just being willing to say, okay, I'm stuck and I'm going to be willing to be stuck for 2 weeks. Because we have to be willing to do something to come back to peace. And so every time I'm working with someone or coaching, like my job or my goal or my intention is not to get them to decide what I think they should decide. My intention is to get them to come to peace with their decision, because in that there will be movement.
Okay, makes sense. Makes sense. Let's take a quick break because I want to talk about four things we must do during difficult times. And because, you know, we've got so much going on, we want to look at this as an opportunity. So we'll take a quick break so I don't have to break off halfway through there. My guest in this segment is Marlene Chisholm. Her book is called Stop Workplace Drama. Great book. Lots of really good information in there. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicky St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicky asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice, tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Clear, clean, and crisp. Check us out in digital quality sound on FM 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. This is our last segment today. We're talking with Marlene Chisholm. Her new book is called Stop Workplace Drama. And we're talking about relationships today. Obviously, this book, Stop Workplace Drama, is primarily about stopping drama in the workplace. But we all know that spills over into our personal lives and our love relationships, too. So we're focusing on that today. I think it was one of the podcasts on your website, Marlene, and I'd encourage listeners to go there and check it out because you have a couple of really interesting little podcasts. They're very short sound bites, which is, you know, you don't have to sit there for hours watching something.
Right.
But you talk about four things we must do during difficult times. And for whatever reason, you know, whether people are going through divorce or job loss or money worries, you know, many people are going through difficult times right now. And, you know, there's always opportunity in there. But you say, of course, we have to stop the drama to benefit from that. We have to identify our opportunities. So, and the first step you talk about, and we kind of talked about this before the break, was getting clear. We have to get clear. You know, we need clarity to be able to move in a different direction. And so sometimes we're asking ourselves the wrong questions, the wrong what ifs. And, you know, what if we were clear? What if we knew where we were going? What if we had enough money? I wanted to talk about step number two. You talk about being bigger than your circumstances. Tell us a little bit about what you mean about that. You say it's easy to get confused or worry too much. How do we become bigger than our circumstances?
I love this question because we all identify with certain things. We identify with things that are really not lasting. We identify with our youth, our beauty, or our marital status, or our income, or the house we live in, or the clubs we belong to. But we are much more and much bigger than that. And so as we lose some of these things, and we all know any woman that's past 40, you start to see some loss. You know, you get some crow's feet, you get some bags, you start looking different, and your values change and what you want changes. And so we have to understand that we are not the things we think we are. And so I always tell people, don't confuse where you are with who you are. So if you've lost your home, if you've gone through a divorce, if you've gone through difficult circumstances at work or in your home life, you have to grab a hold of this idea of don't let where you are be confused with who you are, because who you are is eternal and connected and you're full of being and light. And so if you understand that, it means that you can do anything, that you are connected, that you are valuable. It doesn't matter that you've had these hard times. That is temporary, just like all the good times are temporary.
True.
So don't confuse where you are with who you are.
Mm, my mother always tells me, well, it's not written in, what did she say? It's not written in concrete or something like that.
Nothing is. Whether our happiness is yin and yang, you know, we're on top of the world today, and I know everyone listening can relate to this. There are days when, like, I think I've got it figured out, and I've just learned not to step in that hole.
Yes.
Today I feel good. Thank you for that. And I feel centered, and I also know that my life is not over. And so I'm open. Mm. I'm open to the journey.
Yeah. Step number three is stop your drama. And we've kind of touched on that a little bit. You define drama as any obstacle to peace or prosperity.
Yes.
So it could be something as simple as fighting with a spouse, you know, arguing with a spouse, getting laid off, losing your home. I mean, it could be a really big thing, too. But you say we have to stop being the victim and become a creator.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because when the mindset is woe is me, we start looking to the outside circumstances to change it, and we go for this myth that I call salvation on the island. In other words, if only the economy, if this hadn't happened, then I could be satisfied, happy, successful, free, whatever. If only my spouse wouldn't have done this or that, had the affair, you know, been addicted to porn, whatever's going on, then I wouldn't be in this situation. If only, and while there's a kernel of truth in those things, we're giving our power away. The only power we really have is right now to make a choice right now based on who I am and what I'm committed to. So when we, you know, become a creator, we take full responsibility for the creation of our life in every aspect, and we quit blaming everybody else, and we quit waiting for everyone else to give us permission.
Yeah, big thing. And the fourth step is we must reinvent. And you certainly reinvented your life. I know I've done mine a couple of times. I've had big, big, big changes in my life. But people tend to get stuck in waiting a lot. Why is that so detrimental to reinventing ourselves?
You know, part of it is just that the way that our brain is designed. We've got this structure in our brain called the amygdala. And every time we make a shift that doesn't feel like our normal life, it feels a little bit threatening, these chemicals rush out, and those chemicals feel like doubt and fear. And so there's something really chemical going on about change because it's very threatening to the brain. So what I tell people to do is that if you really want to shift anything and you want to reinvent and realign, and this doesn't matter if it's within yourself or with someone else, start to see it differently. And what I mean by that is, how do you see yourself? What do you use with the words I am? Like, I am a perfectionist. I am, you know, stuffy. I am quiet. I am introverted. You're now defining yourself. And if you want to reinvent, you've got to start saying, well, I am open. I'm willing. I'm having fun. I'm experimenting. I'm trying this on. When you start seeing yourself differently, you also are training your brain to look for evidence of the new truth that you want to step into. So as we tell ourselves a new truth, we start looking for evidence of that truth, and it programs your brain to look for how that truth is becoming more clear. That's how you really reinvent, because you can sit back and talk about why it's not happening, and you will do everything to find evidence to support that.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is look for new evidence.
Yeah. I want to share a story at this point, because I just love this story, and I read it in the New York Times last week. There was a British author who died at the age of 71. His name was Brian Jakes. It's spelled Jacques, but it's pronounced Jakes. And he wrote a children's series of books called Red Wall. There was a series on PBS made from it. There was DVDs and CDs, all kinds of stuff spun off this series. But I just want to show how he led into this. He was a truck driver's son. He was raised by the Liverpool docks, which back in 1939 were, you know, it was a very poor area. When he was 10, he was caned by his teacher because he wrote a story that was so good his teacher said he couldn't possibly have done it. He left school at 15 to work as a merchant seaman. He had many more blue-collar jobs over the next decade or so. He was a longshoreman, a long-haul trucker, a merchant mariner, a railway fireman, a boxer, a bus driver, and a British bobby. And in midlife, he took a job as a milkman, when they used to go and deliver at home. He took a job as a milkman, and he used to deliver to the Royal School for the Blind, and they invited him in to read to the children. And he was so disappointed by the books they had to read, he decided to write his own story. And then, like I said, it led to 20 million copies of his books being published in 20 countries, more than 20 countries. And I just found it such a fascinating story of reinvention. And he wasn't even necessarily trying to reinvent. It was a process of being open to the process.
Yes. Yes, that's so true. Because I think that we do get kind of sometimes kicked down. You know, one of our skills or talents, a teacher doesn't recognize it, or we get made fun of. And then we kind of live that life of quiet desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that a big part of reinvention is going back to doing things that you enjoy and not worrying so much about the outcome at first. You know, for me, in high school, I competed in speech contests, and that was something I loved. I loved public speaking. So when I was still at the factory at Kraft Foods, I decided, since I don't know what I want and since I'm searching, what was it I enjoyed doing and how can I get involved with that again? And you can see there that I started asking different questions rather than why am I stuck here? How could this ever change? I'm asking a better quality of question, because the questions that we ask are going to contribute to the life that we live.
Mm.
So as I started asking that question, I joined a local Toastmasters, and from there I started putting speeches together, and it was so much fun. And I did that for 4 years. And in doing that, I developed the craft and skill before I actually got out there and started trying to sell myself as a professional speaker.
Yeah, and I can think of a lot of stories like that. It's just being open. My brother was unemployed for a long time when he went back to England. They kept telling him he was too old at the age of 35. And so he started volunteering in activism, basically, community activism. And he's now the director of a huge learning area, helping people who've been long-term unemployed. But it's a really good job he's got now.
That's awesome.
But he got his schooling the hard way. He just volunteered. He volunteered.
You know, I love what you just said, because the third principle in my book is tell yourself the truth.
Mm.
And if we start listening to, like, this is a harsh word, but the lies that others tell us because of their belief systems, we can't fall into that belief and just, like, because someone said he was too old, like, it's easy just to let someone else tell us what our truth is. We
yeah.
have to step into the truth that we want.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just want to encourage people to, like, step into a new truth. Don't fall for a story.
Yes. We do tend to listen to those stories. We tell ourselves we can get attached to them. I just want to end the show today talking about good listening, because we know how important this is on an intellectual issue, but you've only got to walk around and listen to some conversations and know that listening isn't on anybody's mind. talk to us a little bit about good listening, what goes into good listening, because you can say this can literally transform any relationship.
I always say listening is an act of love. It's so difficult anymore for us to be around someone who's truly present to us. You know, even a way of listening is just giving a little bit more eye contact. For example, I was just at a grocery store the other day, and I got some deli meat. And the person behind the counter just seemed kind of frazzled. And I said, what do you prefer, the beef or the turkey? And she said, oh, the beef's a little too high for my pocketbook. She said, I tend to like the turkey. And I said, well, what if I just had like a fourth of a pound of the beef and I get a half a pound? She goes, I said, okay. She got that for me. When she handed it to me, I just extended the gaze into her eyes, and she lit up.
Yeah.
I felt like we had a communication there that she probably doesn't get very often, and we are just not very present with people. So one thing I tell people to do is listen, acknowledge, or listen and ask, versus listen, advise, listen, judge, listen, tell your own story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to be willing to hear someone and to say, you know, wow, it sounds like you've had some challenges, or that's really interesting, versus, well, let me tell you about me, or let me
right.
tell you what you ought to do,
right.
or, oh, I don't agree with that, and I'll tell you why. That is not really listening. Being really present to someone is just, I think, listen, acknowledge is the best thing you can do.
Yeah. And we're almost right at the end of our segment. So very quickly, in 30 seconds, what would you like to leave our listeners with, Marlene?
I would love for them to go to my website. Can I share that?
Please do.
At work. StopWorkplaceDrama.com, And stopworkplacedrama.org is where you can get the book, and you can get into the book club for free, so you can get a lot of downloads and different things that we've talked about today that will help you in your own development, and you can share with your staff.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Marlene. And you opened my eyes on a couple of issues, and I appreciate that. And we're all about stopping the drama. Marlene's new book is called Stop Workplace Drama. Her name, Marlene Chisholm. And you can also find her at marlenechisholm.com. And before we leave you today, did you know that February 14th is also National Donor Day? I don't think that's on many people's minds right now, but the USA government, if you go to usa.gov, visit the fact page, they'd like you to set up an appointment, to encourage blood donors, marrow donors, and organ and tissue donations. So we'll be back next week with an all-new live show, and I thank you for being with us today. You can reach me at 800-495-7617 or through conversationslive.net. Until next week, live well. Live strong.